What's up, everybody? I am about to do an interview with the legendary Matt Ballard. He's been in Kendama longer than me. He's made some of the most iconic Kendama movies ever, and we get to break it down with him and see more about what he's been up to and what is in store for the future of this dude. Hope you enjoy. Hi.
Hey, you're back.
Oh my God, dude. It always happens when I pull someone live. Everything's fine until I make it live, and then it's always something, dude. Okay.
Well, I'm glad it was you and not me. I was just doing like a color session this morning, and the Wi-Fi was terrible. And then I was like, oh no, not like for that.
Dude, no, it's working good. I work off a laptop, and so it only has 3 USBs, and so I have a big hub that does almost everything else. Yeah. And it was just black, like it's usually lit up, and it was all dead. So I was like, but I unplugged it and plugged it back in, and we're killing it. So.
Okay.
Well,
nice.
Dude, it's really nice to see you. For everyone in chat who doesn't know, why don't you tell them who you are and, you know, where you're from currently?
Yeah, it's starting to get super roundabout. So, my name's Matthew Lauren Ballard is my full name.
I like it.
I'm starting to put in the Lauren into my like website and shit.
That's
like that.
Nice. It makes you seem more upper crusty, I think.
Yeah. if you search, like, and now it's like, I feel that all the Kendama videos and everything is, it's like you have to search like Ballard Kendama and then you'll start finding me. Because, it's sort of, anyway, we don't need to really drag that out. But, I'm from Wenatchee, Washington. So I started playing in 2008, which, you know, it's funny because now when I tell people how long I've been playing, it's kind of irrelevant at this point. You know what I mean? Because it's sort of like I was only like after 6 years or whatever, like. It wasn't that I kept progressing after that. It was kind of just like aimed at a certain level. And then so people were like, so what is that now? It's like 16 years. Yes, everyone's like 16 years. Like, yeah, but really the last 10 years, like, don't really.
You must be cracked, bro.
but was kind of in that first wave. You know, I was just explaining Kendama to some people like 2 nights ago and was telling them about the wave from skiing and rollerblading. And I first. Yeah, saw Kendama in a rollerblading magazine in 2008. You know, I was like, whatever, 13, I guess.
Crazy.
The thing was, I was terrible at rollerblading, but I was like, you know, at one of these, you know, we used to have Hastings, like the bookstore. And I was in one of the, and then right when you go in, there's a magazine section.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going through that magazine section looking at, I don't know, some random BMX or whatever. And they had this like rollerblading magazine. And I looked at that. And there was an article of Kendama from Jeremy Stevenson. And it was weird because actually the photos wasn't even anyone playing Kendama. It was just a stack of them. You know, just like you might do when you're bored and you just put up a stack.
Yeah.
And I just thought it looked so sick. Like it just looked like a little, you know, sculpture, a little toy thing. And so then I started reading about it, you know, looked up on YouTube. I'm sure everyone's heard the stories of the few people that were around at that time, like, you know, Shake Mid and a few Colin Sandra edits and one Kendama USA Pro Team edit.
Yeah. With the Gold Mugen as the star.
Yeah, exactly. So basically, you know, I started playing, me and all of our friends from Wenatchee started playing, which includes like Keith Matsumura, who I grew up with. I was just with him. And Keith was, for those who don't know, he was like one of the OG Kendama USA, like second OG, like
second level
Kendama USA. He won like Dama Fest 2013. But yeah, we grew up together. Like I was just with him, and I was looking at these old photos of us in like kindergarten or something.
Yeah, no way.
And I also found this this like when we were in, I don't know what grade it was, but we had to write these poems, and I found these old yearbooks from like fifth grade or whatever. And there was this poem from all the kids in the class. Mm-hmm. And everyone was like, I love school. I'm cool. And then Keith was like this like super long, like ridiculous.
Like full haiku.
It was so hilarious. I showed it to him, and him and we started dying. As hard as laughing, like when Keith's laughing and count me in and he has this laugh attack, you're having like
yeah.
full on panic laugh attack. And it was, oh God, because it's so Keith. Yeah, but basically there was Kendama USA, which was sort of the pro team, like the only sort of team.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was no other teams other than that. And so I had the idea, it's all of us playing, why don't we just become a team? So, because we were, like, I was making some videos, Keith was making some videos, and then I just started making videos of us on our, like, school trips. So,
okay. We would, and you know, via Kendama? Like, was Kendama yeah. the center point of those videos?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Were you filming stuff before that? Or was this the jump start of Matt Ballard's love with filming?
I think this was actually the jump. Like, I don't know, but it all happened in the same year because basically I started shooting, you know, with the tiniest little janky camera ever. Like, I started shooting skiing in the winter and Kendama whenever it wasn't skiing.
And that's what I was going to ask you too, with because I know skiing is a huge thing that brought you and the WKT crew together. Was skiing what led you to like rollerblading, or like were you a skier and then you were like, oh, I like skiing, maybe I could rollerblade, and that's what led you to like get that magazine? Or was it you didn't do either yet?
Yeah, I think skiing started it because basically it was like our school had a skiing program, and basically after Christmas every Friday for 5 weeks there would be no school and we would just get in a bus and go skiing.
Dang. What? Five weeks?
Yeah. And so basically my brother, when he went to that school in sixth grade, he was like, okay, I'm gonna start learning how to ski. And so then my parents also pushed me to start skiing, so I would have been in like third grade or whatever. And at first I hated skiing because I was just super cold, you know, it sucks, like it's not very fun. And then I was going to switch to snowboarding, but then there was one day where I was like, I was with Keith actually, and we were in the terrain park, or like a small terrain park, or we went in for a second and we were like, yeah, we should do this jump. It was like a super tiny jump. And so like I go down and I like hit the jump and I just go flying sideways, like completely out of control. I'm just like, complete, you know, like pancake in midair. Yeah. And I kind of turned into like a 180. Ooh. And like sort of landed backwards, but floated everywhere. And I was on the ground like screaming. And then this guy, like the only free skier on the mountain, this guy who was wearing like a Jesus piece necklace and like with twin tips, came up to me and he's like, bro, that was sick. He's like, you would have totally landed it if you had twin tips. Oh. And I was like, twin tips? What are those? You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And then that was like what snapped for me to be like, oh, there's a whole different universe of skiing.
Yeah.
So then it was like that winter or the next one or whatever, I got twin tips, started like, and then actually enjoying skiing and started to be more fun. And yeah, but so pretty much. Because, yeah, I guess I started skiing with all the guys, like, in sixth grade, I guess. And then it was probably, whatever, seventh or eighth grade that I really started playing Kendama a lot.
Yeah. That's crazy, dude.
Yeah.
I mean,
we would sometimes also just, like, take Kendamas onto the mountain.
Was it Stevens like, Pass?
Yeah. Like, well, I think we were first just skiing at Mission, and we would just like hike, you know, we were super into hiking.
Oh, word.
And would just like spend all day, just like hit a box, take the skis off, hike up just for hours.
Wow. Yeah.
Taking a Kendama then, which was, yeah, like, of course it was hard. It's hard to, you can barely play it. And it's like, You don't even want to interject because if you fall on it.
It's the worst. Since I've been a snowboarder who plays Dama, I like want it on the mountain. But then when you have to sit down and bend over to get your bindings and stuff, you just get it in your chest a little bit. And I'm just like, oh, God, there's got to be a better way to carry our Dama on the mountain, man.
Totally. Totally. If I were. Yeah. If I were to do it again, I'd probably just get some kind of like little like. Which I have now. I kind of have like a medium-sized fanny pack, and I would just go like Dama and like a beer, you know, and then just like rip around with that.
Yeah, perfect.
Because I also when I was younger, like, and when we were all starting, we were like, well, Keith, me, I guess, we're like quite competitive, and I was really trying like tricks a lot, and then basically, Keith started accelerating super fast. And I just got kind of angry, and I was sort of like, okay, I'm just gonna stop, and just started like only shooting, which then see because then now like then I like once I just started shooting, I kind of like stopped wearing a helmet and just because I'm just like chilling, like I'm not really trying anything anymore.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of a different seize. So I feel like then I could probably just take, you know, a kendama, it wouldn't be a big deal. But if you're like seriously there to like try tricks on the daily, like you definitely wouldn't want a Dama on you.
No, definitely not, man. Keith is, when you mentioned Keith and he is, because you inspired me in the beginning, because your tricks were difficult. Like when you guys started, you pushed each other just like skiing. You pushed each other with kendama, and we were in a place with kendama where Keith was like blowing people's minds because he could do 1, 2, 3 lunar flip on command. Like just so everyone knows, that's like the time and place where Keith was like he was the first to do a quad lunar flip, like and could do it in front of you with an Ozura, and it seemed. Yeah. Like impossible, and Keith was he became that dude in our world. Like he was the Takuya of the time who was like, how is he even doing this? Like it's not possible with this Dama, you know?
Yeah. And I think it ended up with kendama it's nice because at least more or less it was I didn't feel there was no like animosity about it. Because also just because I started like shooting a lot, and so I felt that I had a place as well, and of course like I mean yeah because Keith's tricks were just so just bangers, you know. It was like in all the where like WKT films, it's like he's always like the ending banger.
Yeah, I suppose that's you know, totally true.
Like literally, when I would edit those, like I would always just think about, okay, we start with Nick Mayo, I do some shit in between, and then we drop Keith at the end.
That's exactly
Nick's
how.
Nick's are also kind of banger, you know. Yeah. So just be like, Nick would hit some like quads.
He's
like,
always good for one trick that was crazy.
Yeah.
Or standing on one foot on a pole and landing a stilt flip.
He really liked tricks that were like quite like luck.
Yeah. Those are fun to film when you're hoping someone just randomly lands something.
I was going to say, I did want to say though, when I was saying about like the whole we should start a team thing, I remember at some point we were having like a brainstorming session about what we should be called because there was no kendama team. Like, names.
Yes.
Yet. So we were like trying some random names because there was like a skiing crew that we really liked that was called Soul Crew, you know. And so we were sort of like thinking about names like that, you know, that wasn't like location kendama team. And then at some point it was kind of like, yeah, whatever, let's just fuck it and do Wenatchee kendama team because just the most obvious and simple.
But WKT is really what I think we all called it.
And then that's became its own nice thing.
Yeah. Well, and so I love that you're just like, you're leading us along this path perfectly. I love the hearing all the beginning stuff because, I mean, there's a lot of people in chat who don't even know who you are. And I try every year to like show your movies and your videos because it changed my kendama life. And so every year I show them to like and tell these stories, but it's really cool having you to give us the finite details and or the minute details about like the WKT that we watch, like these videos. It started here. It started as a bunch of homies skiing that found kendamas that then decided to go ham in that direction, filming. Yeah. And that's,
it was basically, it was really just like summer comes along and we just want to do shit, you know, we just want to do stuff. Yeah. And it's interesting. Like, I've been thinking about it so much now, and you know, I'm 28 now, and not that that's, I don't, like, in my world is I'm still like super young, yeah. super young. Like, yeah. But I think about just where we are with technology and everything, and how, you know, and people living in cities, and there's just so many other things to do. And I really love the fact that, like, I was born and raised in a place where there was kind of nothing, like, not a lot to do in a way. I mean, there is a lot to do, but you have to go out, you know, there's like, and, yep. and it's not about consuming things. It's about like doing things. And so, and I look back at all the things that I got really into, like kendama and skiing. And it was because, like, you just have all this energy and so, you know, and then a bit of free time, and you want to do something. And mm-hmm. so, yeah, but so basically to like continue that, we were, you know, all just starting to make these videos. This was like Facebook era, when Facebook was booming. Mm-hmm. And I was putting stuff up on YouTube and Facebook. And I remember even like messaging, you know, Wase through YouTube.
Yeah.
Which those aren't like that, all that's been like deleted. So you can't even, like, I wish I could go back and see what we said, you know, but
the last three people I've interviewed are all from like our era. And they all have mentioned the same fact that we talked through YouTube. Like, there wasn't yeah. another way until Facebook became something that everyone had. It was YouTube comments that kind of just, they would reply, and then you'd maybe go to the DMs and talk to them in YouTube. But that's how I met Wase. That's how, I mean, we haven't told the story, but like, I sent you a kendama, like one of my first kendamas yeah, yeah. I ever made. I sent to exactly. you because I was like, you were one of the people making content and stuff. So,
yeah, exactly. You sent me a kendama, and I remember
it was a Facebook message, right?
What?
It was a Facebook DM, I think.
I think so. Yeah. And then I just remember getting it, and it might have been a white one. Mm-hmm. Now that I think about it,
it was a white Dama, the first one I ever, yeah, yeah sweet's yeah. original,
yeah. And then it was so kind of, you know, ignorant, but there was just nothing to know at that time. But I just remember getting it, and it played terribly.
Yeah, yeah, it was bad.
You know, it was like the spike was so long, and like, you know, and at the time, it's funny because I went through this phase where at the start of kendama, when I started like, you know, becoming more involved with brands, I really wanted to be a player. Like I wanted to be sponsored as a player, mm-hmm. and not as like a content, like video person.
Yeah.
Like, and I remember at some point, like telling that to Tokyo, I was like, yo, I want to be sponsored as a player, not just because I'm like making you videos, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
He was like, no, it's all, you know, it's the whole package, blah, blah, blah. And I get it now, but I remember being like, yo, I can't play, like, I can't do hard tricks on this kendama.
Yeah.
And like, and I need to shred if I'm like playing for you, you mm-hmm. know?
No, I totally, you're the only person who turned me down, like, cause everyone else was just like you being like, there's no one doing this. Like, there isn't teams, there isn't other damas. And even but it just goes to show like your, I don't know, maturity may be the right word at that age to be like, this dude's just fucking crazy. Or like, you know what I mean? Like,
it's honestly really funny because I, you know, I'm kind of that way now with everything in my life anyway. But sometimes I think like, oh, I've just become this as I'm like older. But like the thing, like, no, when I was 16, I was like doing this, like being the same is really funny to me, actually. I've never really thought about that.
But yeah, compared to Azura's, the Sweet's first damas weren't anywhere close. Like, yeah. The paint fell off and the shape was bad. So it was a smart move. But I think the other people who said yes were yearning for the same thing you were, but didn't have homies like you did. And I think that's why you said no, because you still had homies to jam with and to play with, like Christian and Chaz, like they were by themselves with that. And when they got me, they were like, dang, there's another human who wants to interact with me, where you kind of had been doing that. So maybe
dang.
It's simply just that.
Yeah. Like, that's really interesting.
You had a team.
I've never thought about that. Like, mm-hmm. I've never thought about that, but that's probably like quite true, actually. Yeah.
I never thought about it either. It's one of my biggest, saddest things ever. My first 2 weeks, Matt Ballard turned me down, dude.
I feel terrible because every time we talk, we end up bringing this up. And then every time I'm like...
I love it. I think it's hilarious. It's, but I sent him to Jake Weans. I sent him to Dave Mateo. Like, I sent him to a lot of people who, like, were on this tip of, ah, there's something else. There's something more to this. Yeah. I'm going to wait it out. Like, you weren't the only one. So, but that was just goes to show my gumption as a person starting a brand with Facebook at my fingertips. I was just like, you know, Dama, what's a...
Which also says a lot about you as well. You know, just be like,
yeah, make shit happen. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So we now know how you got started. Now tell me, like, without rushing through it, like, you create a WKT, Keith gets on Kusa, I think, and then, like, where does the inspiration for the first movie come? And, like, like, how to get us to there? Because that's the thing I'm, like, it's the thing I'm most excited to learn maybe something new about is, like, as a 16-year-old, however, maybe you were 17 at that point now, but what inspired you? What made you think that you could make a movie?
So, basically, we, because again, we were into skiing, and so there was, you know, skiing film that would happen every year from different crews. So there was like the skiing production companies that would make movies and put them out every year. Mm-hmm. And so, and you know, we went, I don't know, maybe went to one or two, like, maybe even like one show. But anyway, I would like buy the DVDs when like, I remember going to Whistler to ski once, and then we go into a shop and I was like buying the DVDs, and you know, you would have the physical copy of it. Mm-hmm. And so I just remember I remember it super clear that one day we were all just hanging out at Zach Winter's house, which we would always kind of hang out there. And I just remember thinking, I don't know why, I was just like, why don't we just make a Kendama movie? You know, it was just like so odd. It just kind of appeared to me like very clearly. And then there was like me, Keith, Zach, and Alex Loomer. I can't remember if Nick was there, but I just remember being like, guys, we should just make a Kendama movie. And everyone was like, yeah, let's do it. And then it was kind of like as simple as that, you know?
Yeah.
And it was, you know, what I can't remember exactly the time that was, but basically when the summer came along, it was just shoot, you know, just starting to shoot all the time.
No, go ahead.
It's sort of hard, like hard a bit now. And when I watch those films now, I don't really like. It's hard for me to think like, how did I order this film or like conceive which segments we needed and stuff like that. Like, I don't really remember being like, okay, we have a good segment of this person, and now we needed this, and then we don't have this. We need to go out and shoot. I don't really remember it being like that. Like, a lot of the times. And you'll like some of the clips, and you wouldn't really know, but some of the clips were also like not shot by me. Like sometimes, like Nick and Zach were like, you know, going to his family's place, and then they would like shoot something and then bring it back.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it was always like whenever we could get people together, would do it and just have as many people as possible. But I don't really recall I remember feeling, oh wow, this is quite somehow organic in the way that it was coming together. Like, it wasn't too conceived, you know. It was sort of, it just somehow felt very organic, like starting to edit those.
The intro is kind of what seemed like you had thought really hard about introducing each person who was part of WKT, right? And that was like this jumping off point of, here's Alex, here's Matt, here's Keith, here are the people you're going to start seeing. And that kind of set us up to, like, I feel it set us up to learn more about these people. But the thing, there's two things. One, I think it's the first time that people included others in their video, where, like, you had cameos, essentially, of other pros that I liked. Yeah. And that was something that had never been done, to my knowledge, where, like, you were just filming someone who wasn't on your team, who you may have just met that day, and you put them in your film because they were a homie. And that was something I think, like, when I saw the first one, I was like, well, I want to be in the next one, you know, like, when are they filming? And I think that's what made it a phenomenon amongst more than just your homies, because That was,
and that's so cool.
Yeah, it was a cool part to me for sure.
That's so cool to think about.
Also the quality, wow, though.
That's quite touching, actually.
Yeah, dude, the quality is crazy too, because I watch after this we do Kendama history, and I watch old videos of you and whoever else I can scrounge up from 2012, but yeah. A lot of it is in 380 or 360, you know, like 420. We don't have 720 even before like 2014 or something, unless you put a lot of effort in. So even when you said you had other cameras, it came across as like a 720 edit in a time where we were filming in 360.
I mean, it was definitely evolving like super quickly with each edit, you know, like every edit was just like, you know, and just in terms of the kind of quality of it.
Well, in your skills, right, as an editor and filmer?
Yeah, well, like, I think that was the best playground for me, you know, like on the WKT Vimeo, there's like over 50 videos, and some of them are all, you know, like plus 10 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, and just like that raw number of hours, just... I think, you don't know when you're doing it, but for me now I know just how that was like everything for me.
You were on the job training kind of without knowing it.
Absolutely. Like, I mean, I used to get angry at my parents when I'd be editing, like when I was in late high school, because I'd be editing and then they would come into my room and be like, hey, can you come help with the dishes or whatever? And I would be like, Mom, I'm working. I was like, no, like, I like, this is my job, even though I wasn't making any money. I was like, really, I remember like doing that a few times, being like, no, I can't, like, I'm working right now, you know,
I'm making a movie, Mom, would you please get off my case. The dishes will get done. Totally. I have to create this masterpiece. But again, I think that's your maturity, okay. Like that I had sensed early on was like, there's a lot of people who still have tons of footage in their computers that'll never be edited because they couldn't bring themselves to do it. So I think it was cool.
Even when I was then graduating high school and was going to, you know, study film, I thought about whether I should become a cinematographer or editor. And I felt that I felt more at home being an editor than a cinematographer.
Oh, wow.
Because it felt more natural, it's calmer, like, and I know I'm quite good at it, but I was like, if I'm gonna keep doing this for a long time, cinematography is gonna push me a lot harder because you don't have infinite time, you know, you have a super finite amount of time, you have to make decisions and you have to push yourself. And so that was why I ended up kind of choosing to go down the path of cinematography as opposed to editing. But I felt I feel in some way my nature is a bit more as an editor, actually.
Yeah. So is that, I don't want to skip past, but is cinematography, is that your job? Is that what you do? Do you work behind the camera? Yeah. You're not the editor?
Yeah. So I'm a cinematographer, director of photography.
Okay.
Exclusively, like that's all, like that's the only part of the production that I'm involved in.
Okay.
So yeah. So now I've been doing commercials for like 7 years or so, and actually I just did my first movie, which is premiering at Sundance next week.
Wow.
So I'm going to Sundance tomorrow. Yeah.
What?
So
that's epic, dude. Congratulations. That's huge.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm super happy.
Oh. Yeah. So you're going to have your names rolling in the credits at Sundance, dude.
Yeah. My first film. It's my first real movie. 2 hours long narrative shot in New York on film.
No way. That is so sick. Oh, yeah. Dude. Do you have high expectations? Does the crew have high expectations? Or is it just another one at Sundance that you hope
it's kind of needy. For me, it's kind of medium expectations.
Okay.
Like, I think that this film... It's a great first film to have.
Cool.
Because for my work, it's like the best thing I could ask for, you know, in terms of that film being the best film at Sundance. It's probably not going to be the best film at Sundance, and it has a number of problems, but like With it being my first movie that I was shooting, you know, I was just like, just barely, I'm just trying to hold on and yeah. get through it because it was so difficult. But the, like, you know, how it looks in the end, I'm super satisfied with. And basically now, you know, for me to shoot more movies, I can show that I've done a movie that looks good.
Yeah.
So it's easier to shoot more movies. So it's kind of a catch-22 because it's hard to shoot a movie if you haven't done a movie. Yeah. So you kind of have to like weasel your way into doing it, which I kind of did on this movie. So luckily, yeah, I'm quite happy with my work.
Yeah.
So
you're proud to put it in your portfolio. Like you're confident that you can get more work from it. Like,
Yeah, absolutely.
That's so sick.
Yeah. Which I'm super happy about because that doesn't happen a lot, you know.
No.
How long, proud of your
system. Yeah. How long does it take to make a 2-hour movie on film?
So usually it's like any like a kind of normal amount of time is like 30 shooting days. But that's like a kind of, like a super small movie is usually like 25 or 30 shooting days, which ours was like 28, 29 shooting days.
Okay.
But then some films are like, you know, 3 months of shooting. And then other films are like, you know, a year and a half of shooting.
Yeah.
But our film was quite different because we shot over, the film was conceived to shoot the different seasons in New York. So our shoot was like spread out over a year.
Oh,
so we shot like 6 days here, 6 days here, 6 days here, which was part of the way that I snuck into it, you know, because they were like, oh, well, this guy doesn't need to shoot for 30 shooting days in a row. It's just 6 days in a row. He can probably do it.
Oh, nice.
it was a little bit of the caveat that, you know, I think that allowed me to shoot it.
As long as the first six went good, they were going to bring you back for the next six.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so let's bring it back to what was the first one? Where We Are? Count Me In? Which is the first one?
It was like literally, first movie.
Yeah, and that was filmed all in a summer?
Yeah, all in one summer, whatever that was. I guess it would have been like 2010 summer or something like that.
It was 2012, I think, or 11 maybe.
Where We Are came out 2012, December of 2012. So 2011.
Yeah, it would have been 2011.
Because those were all, I guess, edited within the same year. So, it would have been, 2011. I mean, basically, it was really small. Alex Smith, we got in it. We had him shoot. I'm trying to remember. He ended up, meeting us. But I also, for the opening of the film, he's, turning the kendama. Him and Kristen shot that separately.
Oh, okay.
Because I was like, I want to see everyone. Can you shoot this and send it so that we have a clip of you to introduce you? You know, and then he comes in wherever at some portion. Him and Kristen came and visited. This is Alex Smith of Terra Kendama. Mm-hmm. And then there was basically Max Norcross. And who was friends of Gus Karstens, who was at the time sort of like Gus's older kendama, or like Max's older kendama brother in a way. Mm-hmm. And I think Gus had made a few videos on Facebook. So we were talked a little bit and I was like, hey, we're going to make a movie. You should come. And then we met up and he brought Max along. And I remember we literally met on the top of Stevens Pass. So basically in Washington State, I'm from Wenatchee, which is Wenatchee, and they're from the west side. And we're like, hey, let's meet up, but let's just literally meet in the middle of the mountains. So we just both drove up into the mountains and then met on the top. And Max was there, but then he didn't even shoot anything. It was just Gus. And Max was just along for the ride. And I think I want to say Max was learning bird then or hit his first bird there or something. I remember there was something to do with him and bird there. And we were
That's so crazy. He's known baby Norks before he became a pro.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, that whole We shot all of that. It came out, put it on the Facebook. And I remember it was fun because it was also Facebook at the time. We were just kind of like, we were dropping like teasers and doing countdowns on Facebook, you know, like 10 more days till this, and doing images and stuff. And it was just like the hype of comments who just like build, you know. It was really fun. Which I think also was the start of me just like starting to use social media, you know, and getting into like how to tease things and whatnot. So anyway, that came out. It got a lot of attention. Yeah. And then there was just a number of people that kind of after that were like, hey, I want to be in the next one. I think like, Matt Dakota was like really like hitting me up being like, yo, we have like, I really want to be in the next one. And yeah, I think that like, so anyway, that we were calling that, it's like the first ever Kendama movie, which was like 25 minutes or something, had all these different segments. And then, yeah, basically started somewhere. I guess then I started talking with a little bit with Jeremy Stevenson. And I just said, you know, the next year or whatever, I said, hey, I'm going to do another Kendama movie. Do you want to sponsor it? And he was like, yeah. And I think I got like $1,000 or something like that.
Yeah, and a bunch of damas or something.
Yeah, yeah. And we sort of conceived to use that money for like one night of a hotel and then like the gas and, you know, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
We went like the road, like a road trip. But then it was really cool because then that just opened up the door to like all this. It kind of, like, now that I think about it, and you sort of brought that up, it sort of just like really exploded after Count Me In to where we are, because all of a sudden it just like gave the okay to reach out to anyone and everyone and get a bajillion people involved. Mm-hmm. So it was like Turner Thorne, TJ, Christian Einetter, you know, and Jake. It just like Dave. Yeah. Jake. Yeah. I mean, it just sort of exploded. Mm-hmm. And it's, yeah, I don't know. It also, when I think about it, it feels like a huge level up in terms of like the quality. Like, I don't really remember what was in between those that sort of like smoothed out that transition. There was a few Kendama videos, but yeah, basically, and Hunter Bailey, who was Kenko.
That was the best part of the video, just so we're all clear. Like, the best part of the video is interviewing Hunter Bailey. Like, yeah, I don't hear this Keith dude doing quintuple. I could do it. I don't want to. I could do it, but you like. And then you guys land your trick. It's my favorite part of anything you've done. Like every time I watch it five times, because the song and the trick and everything just goes so good, bro. That like, yes,
yeah.
It's my favorite part of any of the movies.
It is. It gets you so hyped. Because he's so hyped watching it.
I did. Everyone says it. Even to this day, it's still like, it's the camaraderie, bro. I think aside from the tricks, it's like, man, like, I want to hang with all my friends and do that shit. Like, and that's, and I mean, we could talk about this the rest of the time, but we don't get that through Instagram anymore, right? Like, that's not, there's no vibe curated like that people could be like, oh, it's all just people playing by themselves in their yard. And I think that's, you guys helped make Kendama cool. I mean, you helped make Kendama like this thing that wasn't by yourself. It was always portrayed as something you were doing with other people. And I think that helped a lot of us out in the beginning. And I wanted to talk about the WKT like lock-in we did. Because I think that you invited me to Wenatchee in 2013, I think it was, for like 600 kids. We locked them in the high school, and we had like each pro had like their own circle of kids, and we played games. But I think that came post both videos, because I don't know if me and you were close enough before that to get invited to that. Because I don't know if you remember that trip, but like, you guys were insanely nice to me on that trip down there. And I don't know how or why I was invited, but it was my birthday weekend. And so aside from like the high school thing we did, we went to Stevens Pass and we snowboarded out there, and that with Willie and me, we almost died. That was insane. And
were you in Zach's car and something exploded or something?
No, I was in the other car. Zach, they got in an accident. They hit the sidewall and and totaled yeah. their wit or whatever.
Yeah.
And we still yeah. went and yeah. sent it because I was one day and I was like, well, are you guys okay? Wow. We're going to keep going.
Wow.
But wow. like you guys, I have a picture. You made me a cake on my birthday. It had a JK seal, a Mucin seal on yeah. it. Like you took me to a hockey game. I like these are thoughts that I don't unlock until I like think about you. And then I was like, man, that was a crazy trip. And I can't quite remember how all the points came together because I wasn't super involved in the first two movies. But like we were still close enough where I feel like it came together eventually. And that was one of the
I want to say that that school or the store or something like. Brought your name up.
Was it a wholesaler, maybe?
I think it was the like we had that retailer in Wenatchee, and I think
what was the name of it? Do you remember?
Hooked on Toys.
Yes, of course. Gosh. I couldn't pull it. I couldn't pull the name if I had tried, but that's exactly who it was.
They have a really great jingle.
Laid on us.
The Jake was always singing. Also for me, a lot of those things are a bit of a blur.
Yeah,
because I was also I was always just taking my role and like doing whatever it was.
Yeah,
but that like and the thing is like you would probably even have better context to what that event was in regards to like the greater Kendama scene and movement because. Yeah, for us, it was just kind of like this one-off local, pretty big thing.
600 and then, kids.
Yeah, and then there was, like, we still have all those newspapers, which are, like, quite cool. And you're on the front of it there, like, signing that. I was just looking at it, like.
Oh, send me a picture. I don't have that. That would be cool to see. I mean, maybe it's somewhere deep in my stuff, but I think it was probably a hookup. But. You know, Hawaii was like starting to come together at that point in time. And so like 600 kids was like the top. Like there was no gathering that was larger than that at that point. Yeah. It was like beyond insane that a whole town loved Kendama, not just some kids, but every kid. And they were there.
And I don't even exactly know who was really leading it. You know, this is a long time ago. But I remember that there was basically... You think I was, but there was really some local moms that were like really fanatic about it.
Okay.
And then they wanted to put it together and they were putting it together. And then they asked us to like, you know, be involved BMCs and like do and stuff, it. Yeah. And then they got everything together. But yeah, I mean, it was definitely just some like local moms who were like crazy. Really into it and started. Spreading it all around all of the schools. I remember at some point, vaguely, I remember some, you know, mom being like, okay, yeah, so we have Stacy. She's over at Newberry, like at Newberry Middle School. She's been telling everyone. They have the flyers everywhere. And Karen's over, you know, whatever.
No, of course. So you definitely didn't facilitate my cake in the hockey game. That was some nice-ass mom who was facilitating that. Amen. Yeah, because what you would have been like, 16, 17, you weren't thinking that.
You thought it was me.
I guess just I didn't have any
so nice.
I didn't have any other touch point, I guess, like because I don't remember that mom very clearly. But again, I was a kid too, right? Like we're 8 years apart, so I was, 24 or 26, yep. like I still was figuring out what I was doing, but I was just stoked to be in a new state.
Like all these waves are building. You just kind of like ride it and sign some kendamas, like see what happens.
Yeah, no, it was so crazy, man. Okay, so let's we made some movies. We got together. Kendama boomed in your city for obvious reasons because of all the things you did in it. Then
we were getting like recognized on the street,
Couldn't go to a mall at your town.
No. Like, we went to a mall. It was kind of crazy. And I remember once, like, going into a movie theater and all these kids, and we could hear these kids being like, oh, this is WKT.
Real celebrities, dude.
It was a fun moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think all those things are also a bit what you make. You know, it's fun to... take all those things to the next level. Like when we did Where We Are, you know, we didn't need to do like a poster signing, but we did just because why the fuck not? You know, excuse my language for the viewers, but like, well, why not? You know, it's like
you had a full premiere. You
know, yeah, we had a whole premiere in the theater, tickets. 300 people or something. It's like completely packed out. Came in, and then afterward, you know, we had these tables outside, tables right outside. It was cool because it's actually like the kind of like art, like the fine art theater of our little town. So it's not like a movie theater. It's like you're like going to like kind of fine art like mm-hmm. sort of theater. And then we came out. There's all these tables, all these posters we had made up, printed out. And then we just like all the pros just went immediately behind the table. And then all the kids just came up in lines, you know, super long lines just to get their posters signed. And I think to me that's really cool. You know, quite fun.
It was definitely the part that, you know, it took it to that next level. Like it was sponsored by CUSA. Like that, it made it. You made good use of your $1,000 because it gave a vibe that it was much larger than it was. Yeah. But that was, I think that's what cemented it in my head or everyone's as this legendary thing that I watch yearly because I can't help but remember that being a jumping off point for Kendama and for edits. Like you inspired mad people. I didn't ask you this, but was there anyone inspiring you? Like you just started editing and shooting. Like, were you looking up to anyone in Kendama or non-Kendama to like be like, oh?
Yeah, I would say. Probably Jake Wayne's the most.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Colin was just someone more that was like, damn, this guy's going hard, so I have to go hard.
Yeah, he does that.
And then Jake, really more from like a photographic, you know, cinematographic point of view, I was like, oh, damn. Like, okay. I was kind of like taking subtle, you know, influences and nods to him in a lot of what we were doing. But then it was mostly, there was actually like more some, this other like, yeah, more people that were all like other kind of like skiing people that I was looking to.
Ski edits.
And I was watching and then was kind of like taking like more aesthetic influence from them.
No, that's cool. So when did Crom come into the picture? Like you made these movies, you started playing a little more.
Yeah. At some point I started messaging with Okil online, maybe through Facebook or something. And I remember this was before DamaFest, so it probably would have been like 2012, like pretty much probably, it was probably like Where We Are came out and then he probably started talking or something like that.
Yep.
I remember talking with him and I remember one time I was in class. I remember like where I was and I'm like he texted me or I texted him or something. And then I was like, what are you doing or whatever? He's like, oh, I'm in an ashram in India meditating. And I was like, what's an ashram? Like, what? And then I'm like, who is? I was like, this person's like kind of my age, right? They're like in India and they're meditating. What is going on? Like, it's like, this is crazy. And then basically he had put out his, I think like Terra edit that is in my opinion still like top five of like all time. And then DamaFest 2013 came along, and that was when I first met all those guys in person.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and to give it to you super straight, which is maybe good for some viewers out there to hear, it was like, I was just a pretty like shy kid. I didn't drink, and I just like ended up really connecting with those guys because like Tokyo and Matias were sober and just weren't drinking. And so when I was young, it just felt very like comfortable to be around them because we were just kind of like the sober crew mm-hmm. in a way.
Yep.
And so, and I was just a bit too, like, I was just, yeah, kind of too innocent to be like partying with everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of just ended up like gravitating towards them because then like, we just had like a vibe that was different. And then also like, I was just, yeah, like, you know, doing the kind of video thing, but it was sort of like a lot of times, you know, when everyone was partying and then like, I had never drank before and was just kind of like scared. So I would just like go around with the camera and like pretend I had something to do. You know? Which is why, like, that's basically why, like, the Domafest 2013, like, you know, it's like at the very start of that video, you know, Jake Ween's there and he's like, Kendama, three-story drop or whatever. And yeah. That was because, like, everyone was really drunk, but I wasn't. And I was just, like, sober and shooting and just, like, trying, I don't know, just, like, just so that I had something to do. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I thought, like, so basically I just ended up connecting with those guys. And then was literally, like, the first night I was with them, you know, where everyone was just kind of going crazy. And then it was like us and Turner was there. And then someone was like, hey, bro, we're going to go back to our hotel to our room kind of early if you want to come and hang out. And I was like, oh, sick. So I just went back just with them. And then we were kind of like messing around in their hotel. And then I was with Matthias, which was a friend of Tokyo. I was with him in his room. And then Matthias was sitting down. And he was like, hey, bro, so we want you to join our crew and be a part of the team. And I was like, what, dude, are you freaking kidding me? And I was like, oh my god. And then Tokyo like came in a few minutes later. He's like, hey, Matt, so like there's something I want to tell you. And then Matthias is like, oh, I already told him. He's like, what, you told him? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, dude. He's like, kind of angry. And then it was kind of like the rest was history, you know.
Yeah.
I just felt very like I just had a good friendship with them and felt very comfortable and yeah, they were just kind of like kooky and weird and you know, like, I mean, you know, they were like, they were sober, but they were also the people with like the most energy.
Yes.
Who were like going the craziest. Like everyone, you know, was mostly not sober, and then they were sober, and they were doing these like massive pizza tosses and like just like getting everyone super hyped, and everyone was just like loving them.
It was a Euro vibe, I think, wasn't it? Like, we didn't have, I don't think any of us had experienced European kendama or maybe even European people like very much, because they do bring a different energy. And I remember that from the jump, even just going to their table to say hello for the first time, I felt the energy you were talking about, you know. And I knew from the second they set up their vending table that they were going to be a competitor of mine for a long time, because they were really good at just being personable with people. Like, it makes so much sense, your story. But it's also funny that they offered you a spot like 2 days after knowing you, which is also props to you, you know, for talking yourself into that room. So,
it's funny, man. Yeah. I remember I even started getting quite into. Like, one of the reasons I ended up getting even into jazz was, like, just from hanging out with them. Because I don't remember if it was on... It might have even been on that trip or something. I think they had a car. I can't exactly remember. Or on the next trip or whatever with them. I remember just, like, being in the car with them. And then they started, like, putting on this, like, Danish jazz music. And I was like, oh, what is this? And then Matthias was there, like, you know, just, like, bobbing his head, getting super into it. And I was just like, oh, shit, this is crazy, you know? And I remember it was, like, sort of after that was when I just even started, like, listening to a lot of jazz. And so, yeah, there was just so many different influences from them that Denmark is so kind of ahead of its time. Like, I wouldn't say ahead of its time, but you know what I mean? It's like,
I know.
They already have such a, like, kind of taste and are really into things. You know, just, like, long before I knew about, like, most things, it's already like a part of their culture and in their life.
Yeah. Being an American is tough when you see stuff like that. Cause I remember that too. I just remember going to Europe for the first time being like, what? Like, this is everything. It's so nice.
Like
it's
just,
it's crazy, but it's what has defined them. You know, that energy, that like kitschiness has been what Krom has stood on, you know, until Torko left. That was like what was the binder was him and his kookiness a little bit, because it's what
but it was, you know, it's all the energy, because I mean like literally just the physicality of all those guys, you know.
Yeah,
it's like if you took a GoPro camera and put the camera up into their face, you know, like they'd all be just doing something super weird, like right up into the camera, like that was so, you know, reminiscent of their characters.
And Krom ended up giving you your first and only pro model?
first and only pro model, which was like kind of took a long time to make because it was just like a bunch of it was the first time they were making a pro model, and so we were all being too, you know, we kept going through too many revisions, and it was just like, rather than classic, just putting something in there, you know what I mean?
Well, you guys were designing a new shape though too with that. You guys released the Slay Dog, which was a very different shape, so that's probably what took most of your time.
Yeah, which actually, that's right, because the first pro models that we made weren't that shape, the ones that never even came out.
Oh,
I posted one on my Ballard Chrome account, but like there was this first iteration of my like original pro model kendama. It was something completely different. It was like all mahogany. It was like all mahogany, and then it basically was like a zebra mahogany walnut like kind of striped kama, and then I had like these two wedges of like walnut that were just like this like tall, and it was supposed to go just from the rim of the cup. It was only supposed to be that deep and just go through like the center on each side, but then I kept getting super angry because like we would get it and it was like not made right, you know, it was like too like far or whatever, and then Toko started getting kind of angry. He's like, bro, we gotta just like put it out, man, like we can't keep, you know, revising it. Which now I like makes a lot more sense, and you know, but I think it's you just feel very precious about it. But you know, so basically, also through there, I started making a lot of the early Chrome videos too. So I started like I went to Japan the first time with them, and they like, you know, they covered my flights and like got the trip, and the deal was sort of like that I would make a video with them. And also like also sponsored by Ken USA or something. So I like went out to Japan. My first time in Japan, I was like 17, I guess, which is crazy now because now like I have so much more history with Japan. I've been there shooting and stuff. So it's
for non-kendama things.
Yeah. For non-kendama things now.
Very cool.
And so now to be like, you know, to tell people, oh yeah, I first came 10 years ago. Why? Like for kendama. Like what? What do you, you know? They're like, what do you mean? I was like pro at kendama. Like what? And then like I showed them something, and then they're like, oh, so cool. You know, classic,
of course,
explosion.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting because now I feel like I have so much kind of like Japanese, just like influence in my life. But it all just was like coming like very organically and kind of subconsciously at the beginning. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, Japan's amazing. I love it.
Yeah. So it's like Japan, we did a bit, like a super memorable big trip in Israel when Israel was blowing up. It was just me and Tokyo went out and we did this big event, stayed with Abiram and like made this video. It was called Chrome Yala. And I had a super good time doing that. And then basically Tokyo and I just developed a really deep friendship, you know, and over what's now been pretty much over 10 years. And it's crazy now because now I still see him at least once a year. Like I'll just go to Copenhagen. Like I was just in Copenhagen 2 months ago. I stayed with him for like 4 or 5 days.
Oh, nice.
You know, and just hung out and catch up about everything in life. And it's like our friendship has like never been stronger, to be honest. It was like, it's so, because just, you know, now just having gone through everything that we've gone through and still connecting and being friends, it's like, man, freaking brother, dude.
Yeah, that's so cool, man.
Yeah,
that's so cool, dude. What a great story, man. I could talk to you all day long, but I don't want to take all your time, but I do have one question that I'm most curious about, and it is, is there any future with you and kendama documentation or videos? Like, do you have any itch that you need to... I mean, you know, you got no choice. I have you here live, so you can say no and we can go on, but you know, do you aspire to make another movie someday? Do you have any passion for kendama like you used to with filming and editing? Like, is there space in your life as a cinematographer to actually pull something like that off?
You know, we've had this conversation a few times, and I'm always thinking about it. And every time I'm with Keith, it gets also brought up.
Really? And, well, he's got to feel some itch inside him too, after leaving.
Oh yeah, he's super like, let's do something. I think that, you know, I'm gonna make a kind of ludicrous comparison, but there's a reason for it, and it's just like, if you look at the super mega directors, like real film directors like Steven Spielberg, you know, he like produces a lot of movies and is like executive producer on a lot of movies. Mm-hmm. Like there was a film that just came out called Maestro with Bradley Cooper's new movie.
Yeah.
And he was like the main executive producer on it.
Okay.
And I sort of feel like at the moment, like that makes like that in terms of a big scale project, I would probably be more in the kind of producing role. So I would like I think it would be really beautiful if some kind of up and coming, you know, Kendama like filmmaker director said like, hey, this is this idea, we want to make this thing, like, can you just be involved and just be a part of the creative process? Mm-hmm. And then I would like really love to do that, because that's like essentially for those like Spielberg in that way is sort of just like being like a creative confidant to Bradley Cooper, who was directing, you know. So they're like, would be like basically like Brad, like, well, first off, like Spielberg had that script and then he gave it to Bradley to make, but then Bradley rewrote the script, was talking with Spielberg about it and being like, hey, this is the direction I'm thinking of taking it, what do you think, and would have input on scenes. And then even like Spielberg came on set a few times just to like watch, you know.
Yeah.
So I could see like in terms of a big scale thing like that could happen. And but also I do want to make my own, like I want to make my own edit.
Oh, cool.
like I definitely want to make my own next edit. This is going to be like, you know, dripping like with sauce. You know? Just like because that's the thing is like, I can make something super saucy and very short,
mm-hmm.
and just be like, you know. So I have clips from that I had already shot in New York of my stuff, and then I kind of been playing a lot recently. So I'm kind of like experimenting with just what kind of tricks I like, mm-hmm. you know, and what I want to shoot.
Is there a Dami you've been jamming?
Yeah, it's actually this one, which is like Tio's new mod,
mm-hmm.
Which it was just like, I saw he did the all white and I was like, yo.
It resonated with so many of us old heads, dude. Four like, fingers. Oh, my God.
This for me was even like kind of long.
Oh, geez, bro. I can't do four anymore. That's psychotic. How are you going to juggle that 10 times?
Yeah. So like, but I. Like even because I was talking about it with Keith a lot, I think, when I was just home, and I was saying, you know, even the style of tricks that you do with, like, I want to use the shortness of this string to my advantage, you know,
which is
sort of
challenge.
Like if you do if you do like a swirl like on a big on a large string, it's like you know, just like it, to me it doesn't look good, you know. It's just nice when it's like, you know, like when it just
string
feels
tricks,
like tight.
Yeah. I hate watching people do string tricks with modern day kendamas. Like it pains me to watch people do lightning drop spikes on stage at comps because people almost can't do them. Like that card gets pulled and a lot of AM Open advanced players just go, okay, you get the point, because my string's too long for to get it around twice. Like it's actually kind of insane.
Also, I want to say something regarding the movie thing.
Yeah,
the film.
Please.
Because it's something that I've noticed in, you know, in real filmmaking, which is, you know, filmmaking is like, say for example, a lot of times when a team is assembled to make something, it's usually not the person who has the best resume. It's the person that has the most passion and the person that is in the right place in their lives to like go super hard on it.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times the person with the right resume is like, does it, like, they're not in that place to execute in that way anymore. Like, they're just in a different kind of place in their lives, you know, like,
yeah.
I'm not the same person that I was when I was 16 and 17. And that version of me is probably even like, even more like obsessed, you know? And so I just want to, yeah, kind of say that to anyone listening, in a sense that, like, you know, you, like, there's a next person that could come and make something that is fucking mind-blowing to everyone, that takes everything that's happened and then transforms it into a, even a new thing, you know? Like, so, yeah, I just think that it's hard to see that when you're stuck, you know, when you're starting out and you're trying to make things, but it is important to know that the next big thing belongs to the person who wants to take it and who wants to do it.
Those are great words, man. It's so true, because motivation is the hardest thing to get over sometimes, is just literally just start doing it. Don't quit thinking about it and just do it. Have you seen Burl, all this talk about this? Have you seen the company Burl that has come up in Kendama?
No.
Well,
tell me.
Please, BIRL on Instagram. Go follow them. But it is a video filming initiative. They are premiering a brand new movie that is being presented at Battle at the Border for the first time, with special tickets on a special day that was filmed with Japanese people and Tio and. And it's, but,
go,
it's, but it's a homie Boston from our chat, who's from Vegas, and he is the dude that you are talking about. Like, when you said you need a director for your executive producer, five people typed Burl in chat, because Boston is currently that dude who, like, has the passion and the vision to bring back what you did to real life.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for you to dive into Burl a little bit. Yeah. And, you know,
that's amazing. Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, that's really how it works. Like, that is literally, sorry, I'm trying to.
No, it's okay. You can check it out.
No, I was like trying to, like, find the Discord app, you know? No, but just like being now in the film world, like, it sort of reveals to me how these things kind of work in a way. And the reality of why these things work. It's like, this movie that I just did was from the director. It was her first film.
Okay.
So she wanted to work with someone that it was also their first film. You know, like, she didn't want to work with someone who was, you know, 10, 15 years older than her, who's going to come in and be like, okay, whatever, just another film, even though they might have got, like, a, you know, huge film 10 years ago. She wanted to work with someone that could, like, you know, meet her also and just sort of work through everything together. So yeah, I think it's really, yeah, it's very, yeah.
No, that's it. Timing is crazy. And like I said, the fact that you don't know about Burl is cool, because I think all the things we just talked about, it kind of falls into a lot of those categories. So I'm excited for you to see what you think about it once learn about it a little. Because, yeah, they sold out 300 seats at Battle at the Border. And it's going to be all pay-per-view. Like, I don't think it's going on YouTube. I think the only way you get to watch these movies is by being a subscriber to a Patreon or something like that. So they're spending money making these movies that it's, like, it's worth something. So it's a reincarnation, dude. Like, next week, we'll be watching.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. No, you should send me the details.
Yeah.
Because also, like, we talked about it before, but that was a big change in the Kendama, like, movie making process, was because now, you know, Vimeo and YouTube are so much tighter with music copyright.
Yes.
So if you did have a Patreon or some kind of, you know, limited access thing where you could use a video player that wasn't, you know, restricting the music, then it would be a lot more easy and would be a lot more fun, because then you can use whatever you want.
Yeah. It premieres next Thursday in Nashville. You gonna fly in? I got a seat for you.
Straight from Sundance to Nashville.
Oh my gosh, dude. Just from watching your own movie to premiere to a movie premiere that somehow was inspired by you, I would imagine.
I would love that.
Yeah.
That'd be amazing.
Dude.
Man, any last things we can...
Yeah, let's see. Chat, it's your turn. If you've been holding on to a question for Mr. Ballard, would you put it in the chat real quick? And we'll rattle off a few. We won't get too deep maybe into these questions, but I'm glad we got as deep as we did, though, because it's always fun. Like, for me with these, I know you really well, and I feel like a decent amount of people know about you, but I like learning more about, like, what's happened since Kendama and what you have intentions for, and even like your aspirations when you started. Cause I didn't care who was inspiring you when you were making your first movies. I was just wanted to be in them. But now it's again, like you said, I'm now, this is my 14th year of owning a business. So I'm not the same human I was when I was in Wenatchee with you at that school. Yeah. And I'm having a lot of those realizations and looking back this year, cause Kendama is just, it's not what it was. It is so much different. The media and the people and the tricks and the everything is just eclipse where we started.
Yeah, you know? But you know, and like in another way, it's really natural, you know, that now you're in a different place and your responsibility and place in that is, you know, is just different.
Yeah,
and that's natural. You know, it's just like I was saying. You know, it's like now you're like the Spielberg that's helping out the next generation. You know, but like it's just sort of how it works in a way.
D-Pats wants to know, we talked with Colin about a film session that was just arduous and long and someone landing a trick maybe that was just like, holy crap, I filmed for 3 hours and they finally got it. Like, do you have a deep film sesh that like sparks to the top of your head when I say that?
Yeah, it's more like triggers my No. The most legendary one for me was which I professed that I was quitting Kendama after it was that I it was when I was trying to do triple inward lunar flip for the first time, and there was one day where I tried it for 6 hours in my basement, and then I didn't land it, and then I said I was going to quit Kendama, and then like 3 days later we were at Keith's house. And he wanted to shoot something, and then he was like, "Bro, you gotta try it again." And I was like, "No, dude, I'm like done." And he was like, "Bro, you just need to take my pink Azora, and like then you can do it." Because I was trying it on a green one, so I was like, "Okay." And so then he gave me his pink Azora, and after like 10 minutes or whatever, like I got it, and then I kept playing.
Dude, triple inward lunar tray did that same thing to me this year, or last year. I almost didn't film anything because that trick got in my head and I couldn't do it. I put in 30 or 40 hours, I think, last year and then landed it for my legend edit. But I had the same feeling of like, why am I doing this to myself? Like, there are so many other tricks to land. What am I? But I couldn't start a session without doing what Keith did and was like, okay, 10 minutes. Let's see what we can do. I'm going to go to the next one. Kendrick Franklin says, what is still sacrilegious to you within Kendama? For example, string length or larger sizes?
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say string length because it's just so accepted. But to me, it just looks very fun. It just looks very funny. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I would say there's anything sacrilegious. I mean, just I guess the obvious thing of just like touching the kendama.
Yes.
I wouldn't say there's anything sacrilegious. I just think it's like if sometimes I just don't get the point of juggles. if you can juggle three times, why do it 10 times? It just to me, I mean, if you think about like any good kind of art in life, art, poetry, or a good script, it's all about having the bare minimum for the most impression, you know. I think that, so it's like I would just take away, like, I don't know, so just when things start to become very like have a lot of excess, then that
it's like space walking way too long back in our day, right? Like it didn't make Kendama cooler. It was just like, okay, we get it. You can spacewalk. Like, move on. Next trick. When Matt had WKT and they played a lot, what was his favorite Kendama?
What was yours? Green Azora.
Yeah,
Green Azora.
Easy question. Sure.
I had a few of them, and I said it before somewhere else, but it was like basically when we started, there was only, you know, Azora and TK. We basically claimed colors. So when we first got them, I was like, I'm green. And no one else can have green.
Yes.
And then Keith was like, Keith was pink and no one else could have pink. Nick was blue. No one else could have blue. So that was like our colors. So you see in all those early edits, we just only played with those.
Oh, that's so demos. Cool. That's cool. Wake and Jake says, when you get to see Keith and everyone after 12 years of being friends, do you pick up where you left off? Do you just talk about old times or do you guys focus on nowadays and catching up?
I think we focus a lot on nowadays. Yeah. It's been very interesting recently to, like, whenever I go back, I feel like we just are sort of going on to whatever is kind of the next thing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think we don't, if I reminisce with anyone, it's with Keith.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily like, it doesn't get too golden days, like sad, you know? It's just more like, oh, that was so sick, you know? Can you believe
it? When we laughed till we peed our pants? Yeah.
But
no, it's cool.
Yeah.
So if juggles are your least favorite new gen trick, what's your favorite new gen trick?
I love people, like I love and adore seeing people that are just being very rhythmic with the kendama, you know, where it's sort of like doing something and then someone just snaps into place, you know, and it's like those kinds of things to me are like
wow, a Ventus.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Like think, Adrian Esteban, like,
And it's just like that. And then just seeing good style, you know, where the body's like moving in a nice way. You know, it's that kind of thing where it's just sort of like, it's not this trick, but it's sort of like, you know, if you just laid the kendama like this and then just like hit the spike and then just grabbed it and it just landed straight, like straight onto it in a very simple way. Like, I like this kind of just like,
yeah,
you know, kind of stuff.
It's a trick. It's not a combo. It's a trick. Like, I like that.
And like, basically I never really got around to shooting that way, but basically when I was kind of starting to like, phase out, like whenever I was playing at events, I was always doing that kind of like stuff that was more, you know, like I really like doing that, like where I was doing this like tap move and then just kind of like landing it here and just sort of like and sort of like making a bit of a like a show out of it. Mm-hmm. You know, like I really like that kind of play.
Yeah. Have you seen Yasu do freestyle?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
He dances with the kendama. It's just it's like water, bro. And he's doing quads. Like it's beautiful.
No,
I love
crazy. It. I saw the video of him at Catch and Flow that was just insane.
Yeah, the one where he takes the GoPro.
Yeah.
Okay, we got a few more left. Do you speak any languages other than English now that you've traveled?
So, because I was like, I gotta tell you, I'm living in Mexico City right now.
Whoa, cool!
So, I'm in Mexico now.
Dang!
And I've been learning Spanish.
Cool,
now.
Bueno.
Yeah,
I've been.
Yeah, so four months ago, I left New York. Decided to change things.
That's your new house. That's not where you're on location for filming. You live in Mexico.
Yeah. I'm renting a friend's place right now. Like this is a friend's place, but. Yeah, I'm like here and then like next month I'm going to like, and I've already started looking, trying to kind of find my own apartment, but then next month I'll like move to my own apartment.
In Mexico. I'm very ignorant American. Do you need to have a visa and shit to be in Mexico or can you be there as long as you want?
So you can, it's pretty relaxed. You can be here pretty much as long as you want. Like when you come in, you don't need anything and they just give you a stamp for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And you could just keep like, I've just been traveling in and out and every time they just give you a new stamp. But if you want to rent a place, you're supposed to have like a residency card, which you have to like apply for.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, basically after like in 2 weeks, I'm going to kind of start that application.
Because you like it there that much. You enjoy it.
Yeah.
I want to come visit you now. That sounds so nice.
It's so nice right now too. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like warm out, bro. It's like 70, like 1 degrees. Like the sun is out.
Yeah. Negative 2 out here in Minnesota, dude.
You know, it's like, I don't know if you can.
Oh, yeah. That's beautiful, dude. That's so cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. Let me see if we got a couple more. Oh yeah, you hosted with me at Van Jam. I forgot. That's where we reconnected. You were on the stream with me. Stacey got his pineapple pizza, dude.
It was so much fun. Yeah. Shout out Stacey.
Yeah, dude. Honestly, who's on your Mount Rushmore of Kendama players? Don't think too much about it. Just give me four.
Yeah. I mean, it's like Colin, Jake. I don't know.
Yeah.
Shake, you know, and then maybe probably Tokyo. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think that's chill.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's enough, man. You stayed on with us for so long. I really appreciate it, man. I've been looking forward to this interview ever since I started doing them. I've been excited to have you on to chat with you because it's Kendama history that we can't lose and we can't forget. And we can't forget where we came from. And I think you started a lot of that for us in the world of content creation in Kendama. So I appreciate you for that. And thanks for being the homie and being on the show today. So thanks.
Yeah, of course, man. Great seeing you. Thanks so much.
Yeah, dude, no worries.
Let's talk again soon.
Yeah, please, let's do it. Enjoy your time out in Mexico, dude. Good luck at Sundance.
Thanks, brother.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Talk to you next time.
Bye. Talk to you later. Yeah, bye-bye.
Peace. Yo, thanks a lot for tuning in to the interview of Matt Ballard. I hope you learned something new about Kendama history or just about the man himself. Make sure you like, comment, and subscribe. And let me know anyone else you think that I should interview in the next episode. Later.